Crossroads, East Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM.
I am joined by Gerry O'Brien, who is the president of Irish Equity. Good morning, Gerry. Welcome to the programme.
Good morning to you, and thank you for having me on.
Gerry, we are going to discuss why the Irish Equity and the UK Equity are joining forces to call for equal treatment for all Irish-based performers. Where is the, if you'll pardon the pun, the inequity for Irish-based performers in the UK?
Well, it's not for Irish-based performers in the UK. It's for Irish-based performers here in Ireland.
And do you think that they're not getting the same breaks and perks as other performers, maybe, if we were to put it that way?
Well, it's a case of the way the industry here is structured, because Equity UK and Equity Ireland are two slightly separate unions because of the jurisdictions. And there were historic contracts going back, which are called buyout contracts, that were issued here in Ireland. Now, they would have worked if a film was only going to be shown in Ireland. Do you know what I mean? That the exploitation was only going to be in the Republic of Ireland. But over the years, with the growth of inward investment from major studios, etc., you have a situation where US performers would be working on their agreements, and the UK actors, in many cases, would be working on their agreements. And our agreements were not fit for purpose under the various European legislations, of the Copyright Act and the European Copyright Directive, which was signed into law recently, in that our agreements bought out all future residual payments. So I'm sure you've seen things like Joey on Friends in an episode saying he's had a great week because his residuals check arrived. I've worked for the last 30 years since these buyout contracts came in, and I haven't received any residuals from Irish productions, but I have received them from working abroad. So the Irish actors here are kind of selling out on very bad agreements and not getting the same financial reward for the work that they do.
So explain this to me, Gerry, because this all sounds very convoluted and very complex. If, for argument's sake, an Irish actor, and there are, look, the list is endless, goes to England and makes a film or a TV series or performs on stage, where does the paycheck come from? Are they paid in England under English rules, or are they paid by their company?
If I work for the BBC in Northern Ireland, I would sign a contract that would give me extra payments for the use of the programme. So say I do a TV series that's shown now. If it's shown again on various platforms, you know, the various things that the streaming, there'll be a residual check paid to me because of the contract that exists with UK Equity. But the contracts that exist down here in the Republic are inferior. So I would do a film down here and say it's like a buyout for 10 years. So for 10 years, I mightn't receive any residual payments because they maintain that I've been paid up front the residuals. But you can't do that because you don't know how successful the TV series is going to be or the film is going to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have you now, and it's kind of like royalties. That every time a track is played,
exactly,
you get paid.
Yeah.
Every time your film is shown, you get paid. But I mean, let's discuss the elephant in the room here: money, Gerry. Let us say, for argument's sake, that you make a film for the BBC in Ulster, and it is shown as contracted. No, we'll even go one better. You make a TV series from BBC Ulster as opposed to a film, and that is shown and it clicks with the public, so it's repeated again, and then maybe it's repeated in Britain and various other outlets, as you say, the Gold or whatever it is that they run those series on again and again. You're going to get paid every time that's shown. Now, if you do the exact same thing down here, you get a once-off upfront payment. So my question to you, Gerry, is which one benefits your pocket the greater?
It's not going to affect what you get paid upfront here because the minimums are so low here. So they say they're paying you up front. But here's a trick that you can do. I own my performance for 50 years. So whatever you're paid for the day, divide it by 50. And that's what you're getting per year. But if you have a contract that says, well, if the film makes $1 million, we're going to take 3% of that million and put it into a royalty pool, there's a good chance that you can earn more than you actually earn at the point of production. Because, you know, films, the whole thing is that in the US and in the UK and in all the other English-speaking film industries, they have that sort of 3.5% royalty pool that is taken off the revenue streams, or a defined point in the revenue streams that goes into the actor's pocket. So if a film doesn't make any money, you don't get paid. But if a film makes 100 million or 800 million or a billion, as some of the Disney films do, and the big Universal, you know, the Marvel films, then you continue to get a share of that revenue. So the one-off payment it reduces in value the greater the success of the film. Whereas if you have a proper contract, then your fee is paid. It's the same fee, or roughly the same fee that you negotiate for making the film. But then with the residuals, that is added to time and time again, year on year, for the next 50 years.
And if you make an extremely successful film or an extremely successful TV series, every time that gets shown or gets broadcast, you get a little percentage added to your bank account. Whereas under the Irish system, you get a once-off payment, and if the thing is shown 100 times over the 50-year period, it makes no difference to you. You get your one-off payment, and that's a good look.
Well, there's some of them say they're buying you out for 10 years now, but the 10-year is a total buyout. So then they can go back and buy another 10 years of what they want. But it's still a fixed fee. So the fee is so fixed that it doesn't allow for that variable. Do you know what I mean? For if it's 10 million or 20 million, you're still going to get that fixed amount. So it's a complex calculation. And all the other unions, like Screen Actors Guild and the Canadian unions and the Australian unions, the UK unions, they've all been sort of working at this for years and years and years, but we fell behind. So we're about 30 years behind in how these things work. And particularly when you think that, you know, there's major public investment in the film industry, because the 4-1 tax break gives a considerable tax break through the Irish producers to the international film companies that come in. And you can have several companies coming in on one production, and they'll all own a piece of it, but the Irish taxpayer is going to pay to bring that film in. I mean, every country have their tax breaks to attract film money, because it's fluid money that you go for the most attractive tax break is. So when that happens, you have a situation that all the cast are what they call subsidized in this jurisdiction by the Irish tax break. All the cast. So I could end up working alongside an American actor working on his terms and conditions, which would have the residuals, and working with a UK actor who would have, you know, his terms and conditions, because they won't sign the Irish contracts. And then you have the Irish actor who gets the one-off payment, and the big film company goes away, and all those revenue streams happen. The American actor gets his residuals when he's back in America, and the UK actor gets their residuals, and the Irish actor gets very little. Or nothing.
And
it's an unfair situation.
It is, and then it is no wonder why you see so many brilliant Irish actors and that moving abroad and playing their trade in America and in Britain.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody says, oh, we have great Irish actors and have great careers. And we look at them and we say, yeah, but their careers are predicated, and their financial success and stability is predicated by the contracts that they sign. The contracts over here don't allow for any continuity of income from the success of a movie, and that's the problem. And it's something that has to be looked at. I mean, why are we subsidizing a film industry that offers inferior terms and conditions to our own indigenous performers? Do you know what I mean? That's silly.
I do, and I also hear the point you're making, Jerry, and a very valid one as well, that, you know, public money, taxpayers' money, is going into the funding of a lot of these enterprises, and it's benefiting companies outside the country.
Oh yeah, And there's also the situation. A lot of the stuff that we're seeing on television now, including some of the really good stuff that's coming out of Ireland and the Irish, kin, things like that, Hidden Assets, all of those, they're really excellent programs. But they end up showing on various platforms in the States because there is an American or a US or a UK investment in them to make them, because they represent really good content for other European and English-speaking markets. So, I mean, I won't see a penny. I just finished something before Christmas, and I won't see a penny, really, out of that when it's sold abroad. Plus the fact that, I know that the fees paid to the Irish cast would be quite substantially lower than fees paid to the UK or to the any visiting performers. So that's something that we, Indigenous Irish actors are aware of. And it's not a case that I want the same money as Tom Cruise if I'm working on a film with Tom Cruise, but I want the same level playing field of terms and conditions that are offered to any other actor. If I was working in Northern Ireland, I would have... I mean, and there's the ridiculous situation that, the two unions exist side by side on this island, and we have two film industries, both heavily subsidised by the state, by public funds, because the Northern Ireland has their film investment packages as well, and then you have the public funding down here. And yet the contracts, when you put them side by side, ours is inferior. And you can have a production company availing of money from Northern Ireland and the Republic and filming down here and undermining the agreements that exist in Northern Ireland.
Jenny, you've explained it very, very well. I have to say now, you have unravelled that minefield exceptionally well for me. I now get it, if you understand what I mean, and I understand exactly where you're coming from. And by God, it is one complicated, convoluted system. Now that we have that nicely boxed off and explained, my next question, and this is, I suppose, the real question of our chat this morning, Jerry: how and who can fix it?
Oh, there's numerous ways to fix it. I mean, it can be fixed by negotiation, but unfortunately, the contracts that have emerged from negotiations in the past few years between, and I have to say, I mean, I'm not going to put blame on any one particular party, because we have to take a certain amount of responsibility for not knowing how things work. And by the way, this involves legislation that we've signed up to, because performers have legislative rights. They have rights under the Copyright Act and the Copyright Directive that lay out how we should construct these contracts. And if that legislation exists, and then you have legislation for investing in the film industry and supporting it through 4-in-1, then the two legislations should work hand in hand. So it would be quite simple to say, well, if you're getting public funding from the taxpayer, then the legislation that protects the performers, including that of equality in the workplace, should apply right across the board. So there's a question of making our legislators aware that this is happening. Because it's a very small point. Many years ago, I worked on a film in Los Angeles, and it was a hugely successful franchise at the time. And that was in about 2005, 2006. And I put this up on my Facebook page to make a point. So that contract was what they call the SAG-AFTRA contract, which is the American contract. It's the holy grail of contracts, film contracts and things like that. And the day after the press release, I think it was the morning after the press release, and our meeting, I got a check in the post from that film for about, I think it was $900 and something, a film that I did 16 years ago. Now, that was only part of what I get every year from it still. Now, I add that to my income as an actor, as earned income, my U.S. earned income. And that then is added to my tax take, so it goes back into revenue. So a job I did in America is now paying tax into the Irish system. So it has to be...
It needs to be highlighted as well, Jerry, sorry for interrupting you, that it's a job we did in America 16 years ago. Is still to this day benefiting the Irish tax system.
Yeah, Yeah, but you look at some of the hugely successful TV series that are going around here now, and there's precious little money coming back into the pockets of the Irish actor to be taxed out of the pockets of the Irish actor, because we pay tax the same as everybody else. There's this great sort of misunderstanding that artists don't pay tax. We've been paying tax all our careers. So that's part of our income. So that goes back to the States. So if you have a good and vibrant film industry, and the creative part of it, the performers, and by the way, this would apply to writers as well, etc. If they're getting a share of that revenue, it's coming back into our community and being spent here. So, you know, that should be an incentive to make, you know, legislators say, well, if we're giving public money to this industry, then we've got to make sure that the people we all talk about as being people we respect hugely, and I'm constantly told how highly respected I am as an actor in this country, you know, but except when I talk about money. But, you know, the legislation should actually protect us equally to any other actor who's working on a film that's subsidized in this state by public funding. So that's one of the areas that you could do. That could fix it. It also takes good negotiations, but that goes into sort of trade union situations where, you know, the European Commission and FIA, which is the Federation of International Actors, who we're affiliated to as well, they know that collective bargaining is a very difficult thing, and it's sort of a voluntary thing here, collective bargaining. So if you're in a weak position in the collective bargaining, you don't come out of it too well. But you're even weaker when you don't have a strong union. So it's, I mean, no individual actor can negotiate their terms and conditions, because there's a set terms and conditions, and they say, that's it, you want the job, that's it. So you need a very strong union, and you need a very, very integrated union into the industry, because it is, you know, and I'm not saying this against anybody, it's the nature of the industry worldwide. It is probably one of the most commercially predatory industries in existence. And that's why you need a very strong union hand in it, to protect people from the predatory nature and the exploitative nature of the industry itself.
Jerry, something came to mind there now, and you just triggered something when you were talking there, and it was very early in your last piece. Is there a case to be made that this is illegal because it's discriminating in the workplace?
Well, I've been looking at contracts now for the last... well, I was vice president for a long time in equity, and I've been looking at contracts and looking at legislation. It falls into an area of it being a civil case more than illegal, but it does sort of walk the line with regard to whether or not the industries and all of the industries in the audiovisual area, and I include all of our broadcasters in this as well, whether or not they're walking a line with regard to full compliance with all of the legislation. And I say that, you know, guardedly, because it is a very difficult piece of legislation. The Copyright Act and the Copyright Directives, they are very delicate pieces of negotiation that actually support the idea of negotiation rather than laying down a fixed figure. Do you know what I mean? It's a difficult one to say whether it's illegal or not. I would say it's just walking the line of compliance, shall we say.
Jerry, before we part company, and I'm very, very grateful to you for joining me this morning, because that is one complicated system to explain, and you have done it so eloquently, and I really do appreciate it. And my guest is Irish Equity President Jerry O'Brien. Jerry, is there a role for government, and particularly, we'll say, the Minister for Finance and the Minister for the Arts in this... in resolving this issue on your behalf, to your satisfaction, may I add?
I think they have a very strong role to play, because it is about, you know, the stewardship to a degree of public funding, and it is a very vital industry that you know creates huge amounts of employment. But if you're going to invest, and part of the legislation of 481 is that it creates jobs of high value. So if you have a situation where intellectual property is at the core of the industry, then you should make sure that the value of that intellectual property, that's what we have as actors, I own my performance, it's called intellectual property. If you have a suppression of the value of that, then the economy is not benefiting to the maximum from its investment in that industry. So you have to be very, you have to be very careful. But I do believe that the Minister for Finance, etc., I think they do have a very strong role to play, because it's a very, it's one of the few popular tax breaks that exists because of the great benefits it does give the country in the employment of crews, in the inward investment, in the ancillary benefits to hotels, etc. When, you know, all of the areas that, that benefit, that's the soft benefit. But there's a very core hard benefit that if you have a, an equal value on the intellectual property globally, then you would begin to see revenue streams coming back into our community, which can then stay in our community over a 10-year period.
And consequently, of course, Jerry, be reinvested back into the industry to create more revenue and more employment.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a slight divergence sometimes between our producers and actors, because they know the value of the intellectual property. Our actors sort of don't, and they don't understand it. And I've had to spend a long time sort of delving into this. But I think, you know, I think we do have to look at making sure that the core heart of the industry, and by the way, you know, the Copyright Act is now affecting a huge sector of this industry, because it applies to writers, it applies to musicians, it applies to dancers, it applies to actors, it applies to performers. So every time you use anything in the film industry, there is a potential that for 50 years there should be a small revenue stream coming back. Now, I'm going to say something. That revenue stream could be a check for €7 or 70 cents, and I've had that. But if the words of the contract are the same, the words that generate 70 cents could also generate the $1,000 that I got, or the $900 that I got, and have been getting every year. Do you know what I mean? If the words are the same, it is dependent upon the success of the production. So each production would then generate revenue back into the state for any of the actors or the writers, performers, musicians, etc. Exactly as you said, it's like musicians' royalty.
Irish Equity President Jerry O'Brien. Jerry, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I will ask you one favour, if I may, before we part company, if you would keep us up to speed and in the loop in relation to this. I find it fascinating, I find it very interesting, and I have no doubt so do our listeners. In the meantime, Irish Equity President Jerry O'Brien. Jerry, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much. And I hope to all the actors out there that you do get around and just go onto the website and join the union, because, you know, the stronger we are, the quicker this is resolved.
And I would also like to point out that this, along with our other interviews today, will be available on the Near FM Listen Again website later on, so you can go back and listen to it and hear Jerry unravelling the minefield, as I said, that is the contract law that applies to Ireland, which apparently is absolutely off the wall when you compare it to, what, 45 minutes up the road? Makes no sense.
Yep. Indeed it is. Doesn't make any sense. I appreciate you.
Sorry, Jerry. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I really do appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, and thank you for the time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Across Northeast Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM.